Siren Radio.
And the weather today, highs of 19 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. And after a misty start, it'll be a day with some warm spells of sunshine.
Putting together an audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
It's Walk to School Week, and the reason this is such an important and vital part of the whole sequence, and certainly with respect to the Midweek Drive, I suppose we should really rename it in an honorary fashion, the Midweek Walk to School. But it's all about the whole notion of walking to school effectively, positively, and actually reducing pollution. And to actually take us through some of the sort of aspects of this, and a recent survey which suggests that actually 2 in 5 parents of primary school children are worried about local air pollution levels, with a third taking pollution into consideration when choosing a school, we're delighted to welcome to the programme today Director of Local Impact for Living Streets, the awesome Jenny Wiggle. How are you, Jenny?
I'm good. How are you today?
Marvellous, sir. I presume you walked to the studio.
I did walk to the studio.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Share with us, Jenny, this particular survey, the results of which are released today. Over 1,000 parents interviewed of children aged between 4 and 11, between the 6th and 10th of April. And it's revealed some interesting aspects which some people might have thought, I didn't think people were that concerned about pollution and obviously how to safely walk to school.
Yes, well, the research that we've done with parents does show that there are a lot of parents. It's 42% of parents are concerned about the levels of air pollution around their child's school or on the route to school. So that's quite a high number of parents who are considering that. And also people saying that they've been put off walking their child to school. 30% of parents nationally saying that they've been put off walking their child to school because of air pollution concerns.
Now, the National Audit Office has recently produced a report which found that 37 of 43 air quality zones in Britain do not meet EU regulations. So that's clearly a thing to bear in mind. And part of this report that Living Streets have put together has really focused on cutting air pollution. And presumably, again, it's part of a virtuous circle that the less you actually use car vehicles, then obviously the more likely it is to actually have better air quality, the more likely it is that people are going to be walking to school as well.
Absolutely. These two things are very connected. And as the charity for everyday walking, what we want people to do is consider where they can cut out unnecessary car journeys, you know, enabling more families to be able to walk to school. And that must be part of the solution. So instead of hopping in the car as the default option to take children to school, think about whether you can walk them either all or part of the way, and then children are going to arrive at school feeling happier, healthier, ready to learn.
Certainly from the perspective of indeed keeping traffic flow going as well, it's very noticeable that during school vacations and so on, the traffic runs around the sort of 8:30, 9:30 areas in all parts of the country, I'd venture to suggest, tends to be a lot easier. So actually, there is a kind of win situation here for the average commuter as well.
Oh, absolutely. 1 in 4 cars on the road at peak times during the school term are on the school run. So that's a lot of cars that are focused on getting children to school. And you're completely right. Everyone notices the congestion reduce when we're not in school time. So that's something that's going to have an impact on everybody. It's an impact on how we move things around. So that's where the necessary car journeys can be moving more smoothly around, and everyone else can be, you know, choosing alternative forms of transport. We need to make that better and easier for people to be able to do that.
Allowing for the fact that clearly Jessie Norman as Transport Minister has an awful lot of things to consider, rail challenges and various other elements, do you feel that this report by Living Streets will actually sort of impact, or will it be a case of you say, well, that's very nice, and then casually begin to put it to one side?
Well, we hope it's going to have an impact. We've got 21 recommendations in there, so it's not just around one element. There's a number of things we're asking for there, and we're recommending that schools, local authorities and government work together, and what we're looking for from government is, for example, enabling signage around schools that will help schools to and local authorities to have around schools areas which stops cars coming up to the school gates at that early part of the day and the end of the day, so it's safer around the school gate, less congested. There's better air quality for the children as they come and go from school.
Are there any indications that other countries in the world have actually got this better, or that somehow, well, once again, Britain is trying to take a lead in this, or is it just a case of, well, maybe we need to learn from certain countries and not from others?
I think there's a variety of things happening around the world, and countries are really trying to tackle the issues with air quality, but also the fact that people default to cars, and we've got huge problems with physical inactivity, and that's rising around the world. So the cities doing different things, and it's about finding solutions that work for those cities, for the countries, that work for their local people.
I'm very familiar with park and ride, but I was intrigued by the whole notion of park and stride. Nice touch there.
Yeah, so the park and stride is what we encourage families to do when that, you know, they might be taking the car onto work and they have to do that, or they've got to drop off a lot of children, or they live a long way from the school. You know, we know that there's challenges for parents. So what we're encouraging parents to do, instead of feeling that they have to drive right up to that school gate, which is congested, and primary school pupils especially, it's really not a safe area for cars to be driving up. You've got very young, very small children that can't see, you can't see them. And there's the air quality around the gates as well. So we're encouraging families to think about ways that they can stop somewhere, say 10 minutes walk away, and then just walk the children the last 10 minutes away and walk back to the car. Everyone gets a little bit of that exercise, and a lot of the stress is then taken away.
Employing nudge theory techniques to gradually get people to change their behaviour is a fairly standard practice in terms of actually developing areas of change in society. Do you sense, Jenny, that actually this is gradually making an impact? It's taking time, but it is clearly getting people thinking about best ways to take alternative plans and routes to work?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. You know, we talk to people all the time who want things to be easier for them to be able to do it, who say to us when they start getting involved in our walking programs and they swap their school run for a school walk, that they enjoy it more. We've got quotes from parents who say it's actually the best time of day for them to spend time with their child, and that they get to have better quality conversations in that walk to school than at any other time of the day, because there's no other distractions, just there's them and their child walking to school. And so people are really seeing the value when they get an opportunity to try it out, and they really welcome it for their mental well-being, their time with their family. So I think we're just starting to move people in that direction, and they're wanting it.
We've got hashtag Walk to School Week for one of the tags, also at Living Streets. Is there anywhere else that you'd recommend people should go, Jenny, to actually find out more about this survey and indeed suggestions to actually engage not just in Walk to School Week, but obviously changing behaviour patterns when it comes to the school trip?
Absolutely. Come to the Living Streets website, so it's livingstreets.org.uk / for Walk to School. So livingstreets.org.uk/walk to school. You'll find lots of resources and information there. We've also got a family parents toolkit there, which can help parents who want to get engaged with issues more locally and understand what they can do with their local schools to improve the walk to school in their area. But there's lots of other pieces of information there and lots of other things you can look at about what Living Streets is doing around the UK.
Okay, Jenny, a final little task for you to do, and it's wearing your music producer's hat. We've got three choices of music here to actually walk to school. We can offer you the very traditional Val Doonigan and Walk Tall, Nick Straker Band and Walk in the Park, or the Bangles and Walk Like an Egyptian. Where are you going to send the listener?
Oh, goodness. Maybe the Bangles at the end there. Let's get everyone up and charging around for a Monday.
I had a feeling you might go for that one. Jenny Wiggle, Director of Local Impact from Living Streets, many thanks indeed. We salute you. Take care now.
Thank you.
The pond which resists take their trays spin. Slide feet up the street, bend your back, shift your arm, then you pull it back. Life's hard, you know. So strike a pose on a Cadillac. If you wanna find all the cops, they're hanging out in the donut shop. They sing and dance. They spin the club crews down the block. All the Japanese, the Italian, the party boys call the Kremlin. And the Chinese know. They walk the line like Egyptian. All the cops in the donut shop say. Walk like an Egyptian.
And away they go, the Hoff sisters and more. Bangles, walking like an Egyptian. Okay, coming up next, we'll be speaking to Dr. Jean Emberlin, hay fever expert. And clearly to actually address that, I feel just a tad Neil Diamond-y and Barbara Streisand.
You don't bring me flowers. You don't sing me love songs.
You hardly talk to me anymore. When I come through the door at the end of the day,
I remember when you couldn't wait to love me. You used to hate to leave me. Now after loving me late at night,
when it's good for you, you're feeling all right.
Well, you just roll over and turn out the light. And you don't bring me flowers anymore.
No, quite right too. Barbara Streisand, Neil Diamond, you don't bring me flowers. Probably because of the hay fever challenge. Oh, I know, we couldn't resist it. And that's one of the reasons we're moving now, seamlessly perhaps, to Dr. Jean Emberlin, ace hay fever expert. Jean, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning.
Excellent. So that line there about don't bring people flowers and so on. I mean, people tend to think about hay fever being connection with pollen and a variety of other things. Just break it down for us to start off with, Jean. What exactly is hay fever?
Well, I think the name's a bit misleading because it's really got nothing to do with hay, and you don't get a fever, you don't get a raised temperature. Hay fever is basically an allergic reaction to pollen and spores. What happens is, in people who've got hay fever, the body reacts to these pollen spores as if they were something harmful and tries to get rid of them, tries to get rid of them out of the body by sneezing, producing a lot of mucus, runny nose, runny eyes, and so on. So it causes the horrible symptoms of hay fever, which are some of them I've mentioned just now, but also itchy eyes, itchy mouth, very frequent sneezing, no raised temperature, that's important to note, it's not like a cold. And then after these symptoms, you may get a second phase of symptoms, including a blocked nose, puffy eyes, you feel tired, you can't sleep, get irritable and so on. So although some people think that hay fever is a trivial thing, it's not, because it affects virtually everything you do, from driving, work at school, work at a place of work, in the office and so on, even looking after young children. And if you don't control the symptoms, they can develop into asthma.
We've got three fine souls in the studio, and I'm going to just work through the process. Stephen Atkinson, does that chime with some of your own experiences with respect to being a hay fever sufferer?
Absolutely, and certainly with asthma as well, it can really exacerbate things dramatically. Quite interestingly, I never really suffered from hay fever till I was about 18. Is that something that tends to happen, Jean?
Yeah, that's fairly typical. The profile of, let's say, a typical hay fever sufferer is they might start to have a few symptoms at about 12, 13, and then the symptoms get worse through the teens, perhaps peaking to, say, about 17, 18, through to perhaps the early 30s. And then it used to be that the symptoms faded, but these days a lot of people carrying on having hay fever symptoms, well into middle age or beyond. So the profile is changing a bit, but having the very difficult symptoms in late teens is typical.
Christian, thoughts from yourself? Does this again echo some of your own experiences?
Yeah, I suffered from it throughout being a teenager, from being quite, you know, sort of like you said, I think 12, 13 or whatever. And throughout my GCSEs were awful, trying to sit them, crying, tissues, everything.
It's just the emotional overwhelmness.
maybe the stress on top of it as well. But yeah, mainly the pollen as well. I mean, it was awful, like, to sort of try and deal with it. But I went through all the medication and stuff, but what do you think is the best medication, sort of, you know, like, stuff to use to try and combat the...
Is there any such thing as the best?
Yeah.
Let's go for Optichrome hay fever eye drops straight away.
Well, absolutely. I was going to say, if you're crying, you can't see, and obviously you've got eye problems, you need to control those so you can do your exams and do your work.
Yeah.
And Optichrome eye drops are perfect for that because they will control the inflammation and the increased tear flow, etc. So certainly I'd recommend those. And then if you've also got sneezing, there's a whole range of things you can do, like taking antihistamines, corticosteroids, and other remedies are there. But if you're not sure what to do, because you may have perhaps asthma as well or other medical problems, then talk to your pharmacist or your GP to get advice on what's available. Because for most people, the symptoms can be controlled. So it's important to control them so you can carry on with life and enjoy life. No one wants to stop indoors all through summer.
Ruth, mm-hmm. Any thoughts on how you
have hay fever? I can relate to Stephen, for sure. I had hay fever later on in my years as well. When I was 24, it started. What I can say is my one tends to come and go. So early spring will start and then it'll just stop. Throughout the summer, I'm okay. Then early spring will start again, so... I don't know. We've got a love and hate relationship, me and hay fever.
if you have hay fever in the early spring, it's almost certainly due to the spring trees, particularly birch. Birch is the most allergenic tree pollen that we have here in the UK. In early spring, you also have alder and hazel, and they cross-react with birch. So your profile is typical of a tree pollen sufferer.
Are sort of hay fever symptoms getting worse, Gina? Or is it just a case of... And also, can you tie this in with dust as well? Because I often find that sort of, if there's dust around, sometimes that kind of brings on hay fever symptoms.
Well, yes, and the first question was, are hay fever symptoms getting worse? Well, there's a lot of evidence, both from research projects and anecdotally, that individual people's symptoms are getting worse, and also the number of people who have hay fever is increasing slowly, not dramatically, by about 1% a year in the prevalence, the number of people who have it. And this could be for a number of reasons. But one is that seasons for hay fever are getting longer due to climate change. We're getting more really sunny, hot days. Our pollen counts are tending to be a bit higher than they were a few decades ago. And for individuals, the symptoms often get worse as they get through the 20s into 30s, because unless they're controlled, the symptoms will get worse. And if we overlay that with air pollution, which has been getting worse over the last few decades, mainly because of increased vehicle exhaust fumes, etc., that will exacerbate, make symptoms worse anyway, because of the interaction of the air pollution and the pollen and the impacts on the airways. And you mentioned dust. Now, dust obviously comes in different sizes. If it's large particles of dust, like soil particles being blown up by the wind, then these can act as irritants, like bits of grit in your eyes or up your nose, make you sneeze, make your eyes itch anyway, and make the symptoms seem worse. But if the dust particles are extremely small, like PM10, that's particulate matter, less than 10 microns, or the very fine, very small dust, PM2.5, that's particulate matter below 2.5 microns, those can go deep into the lungs as well and cause other problems, including getting into the bloodstream and then being transported to the heart or the brain. So they're very serious dust-related problems. But all these dust particles can make your symptoms seem worse. And also the pollen, if you think of a pollen grain, it has lots of the allergen on the outside and it's sticky. That the pollen grain is sticky, and dust particles stick to it and pick up allergen. So the dust particles themselves can have some of the pollen allergen on. So that can make your symptoms worse as well.
Jean, I've always wanted to get a programme to go which has particulate matter. All we need is a bit of Philip Pullman, Book of Dust, and all's well with the world. It's a different kind of dust, obviously. Stephen, any closing thoughts from yourself?
No, not really. That was really interesting how it has sort of evolved as well. Like you said, people tend to be suffering for longer as well later on in life. So, yeah, I guess it's just part of the rich tapestry we live in.
So, Jean, from your own perspective, what are your top hay fever solutions? What should people listening to this who, I mean, we've obviously talked about the eye drops possibility as one, the Optichrome hay fever eye drops. What would you suggest we should be doing? Is it a case of use Vaseline or use masks, don't breathe, whatever?
Well, I think that the first thing is obviously to get expert advice suitable to you. Either talk to your pharmacist or your GP to sort out your particular best treatment or medication. So that is what treatment and medication advice, first of all. Secondly, I think, is it avoidance of pollen as far as possible. Nobody, as I said, likes to stay indoors all summer. But you can avoid the worst of the high pollen counts. Listen to the forecasts. If you can avoid going out when pollen counts are highest, which is usually first thing in the morning, late afternoon, early evening, going to places where pollen counts are going to be high, like parks with unmown grass, places like that, avoid those. Go instead, if you have a choice, go to places where there isn't a lot of flowering grass or flowering trees or pollen coming off. Avoidance. Keep the pollen outdoors also. Shut your doors and windows at home so you don't let the pollen in. When you come in, wash your hair, change your clothes, change your shoes, so you're leaving the pollen behind. Cover your bed up during the daytime so you don't get pollen depositing on it, and then take the cover off gently at night time. Otherwise, you'll be lying down on a pollen bed, literally lots of pollen on your pillows, etc. And if you have furry pets, give them a brush over before they come in and don't bring the pollen indoors. So keep the pollen outside. Don't hang your clothes out to dry in outside on a high pollen count day. Otherwise, the washing ends up being a filter, bringing all the pollen in with it afterwards, so you have pollen on your clothes before you start. So it's medication and avoidance, and thirdly, lifestyle. You can do things in your lifestyle to prevent getting very severe symptoms, or at least help stopping it from being severe. For example, eat a very healthy, nutrient-rich diet. Try and avoid too much alcohol. Keep the stress levels down if you can. Other tips include things like avoiding pollution places, if you can, places with high pollution. And even people don't think that going to swimming pools, indoor swimming pools have high levels of chlorine, and that can cause irritation in your upper airways and make your hay fever symptoms worse. So it's treatments, avoidance, and lifestyle.
Absolutely. TAC, tech. Fantastic stuff, Jean, as we knew it would be. Many thanks indeed for joining us today. Finally, is there a website that you'd suggest that people should actually go to find out further information or details, or should they just play the podcast back?
Well, you can play the podcast back, certainly, but also a very good website is optichrome.co.uk. Have a look at that.
Dr. Jean Emberlin, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll make it explicit. The connection between hay fever and the Killers. Well, Brandon Flowers, in it. Okay, moving on from the lead singer there to an ace lead singer who I wonder might well do a jazz version of Read My Mind. Possibly. It's the amazingly talented Kerry LaBurne. How are you, Kerry?
Good morning, Alex. Great to speak to you again.
Exactly. Do you know, it seems like only yesterday we were down at the wonderful world of Burley Horse Trials. You were performing there. And yet, actually, we didn't find you last year in 2017. Were you not at Burley in 2017, or did we miss you?
No, I wasn't there, actually, last year, which was a shame, but there we go.
I went on record as saying it just the horse trials were just, it was just lost without you, basically, Kerry.
You're
I mean,
too kind.
So many sort of routines from that point of view. Kerry, clearly the material you actually bring to the world is awesome, and we've got three fine folk in the studio, Christian, Ruth and Stephen, who are about to hear some of your magic for the first time, actually. First time.
Oh, great.
It's a wonderful stuff. So would you like to just set the scene a wee bit by explaining what the joys of messing with fire is all about, apart from an advisory, of course, because you shouldn't, unless you're a pyromaniac or some kind of line. You don't want to mess with fire. It's different lines. I mean, I'm not sure whether it's a public service piece you're taking with, or is it an emotional fire? Kerry, talk us through this.
I think probably like most songs, it's about an emotional fire. This song actually is a song that was arranged for a lady called Claire Teal, who you may know. She's a Radio 2 broadcaster.
We know Claire Teal. She also regularly contributes to our very own Tom Stevens jazz show here. So amazing stuff.
There you go. So this version actually is hers. It was recreated for me by Jim Young, who is a local producer to me. And I really like the song. I think it's from her sixth album called Don't Talk. And it's the opening track on that song. And it really caught my imagination because it's quite kind of moody and it's a little bit cheeky and a bit playful. I think it's very much about, you know, people and relationships and, you know, being careful.
Is it the sort of thing you might like to sort of say as a post-royal wedding thing for Harry and Meghan? You say, you're messing with fire. I think you should listen to this. Listen, sit down, listen to this now.
Let's listen to it. Why not?
Well, exactly. We will do that. Are you ready, Stephen?
Absolutely.
Are you ready, Ruth?
Yes.
Are you ready, Christian?
I am.
Then let's go.
Well, there's some high and mighty people in this big judgmental world. They got morals to which they must aspire. But these high and mighty people, they find it so distressing that everybody's messing with fire. Well, you told me lots of stories. You said, look, but do not touch. Well, babe, we all do things we don't admire. So don't sit there and plead with me. Just hush your mouth, take heed of me. 'Cause everybody's messing with fire. It's a certain kind of hunger, but I guess it's hard to name. But you know when you'll start dancing to its tune. And it's true, there's always something somewhere waiting to burst into flame. This is holier than thou. Look who got the matches now. See how the people are carrying secret dreams. Look at all those hearts out there for hire. Well, look at all those creeping hands that never learned their lesson. 'Cause everybody's messing with fire. Child said I'd burn in hell. Well, sugar plum, I know you're just a liar. 'Cause God gave me his blessing to keep you people guessing about everybody's messing with fire. 'Cause everybody's messing with fire. Well, everybody's messing with fire.
Round of applause, please. Yay! Everybody's messing with fire. Well, you know, be careful. That's the important thing. Although it's a metaphorical messing with fire. Isn't it, Curry?
It is indeed. Yes, it is. It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's very contemporary, that song. You know, the meaning behind it is, I think it's all about morals.
Exactly. Hence the reason we wanted to sort of target it at the recent royal nuptials. Anyway, that's by the by. Stephen, what did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a real foot tapper. Really enjoyed that. It was good. Very good.
Thumbs up for that. Ruth?
Very enjoyable. We'll listen again.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Christian?
It was a very, like, Great Gatsby kind of 1920s sort of thing. Yeah. I liked it.
I see a win-win situation for you there, Kerry. It'll hopefully sort of set you up for the Floral Fringe Fair. Yeah, what a wonderful sort of thing to follow hay fever with, other than the Floral Fringe Fair. Nepcastle, West Grinstead, West Sussex, on indeed the 2nd of June. You'll be there between 10:30 and 5 p.m, I believe, Kerry.
Yes, I'll be performing with my saxophonist. In the duo, the Kerry Laverne duo, that's David Funnell. And we will be there for those 2 days performing in various places around the event, alongside other musical.
Others might be there, but at the end of the day, it's only one. There's only one Kerry Laverne. So, you know,
that particular event is lovely, actually. It's a sort of wildlife vintage event for people that like plants and dogs and that sort of thing. It was set up by a lady called Jean Jackman, and she set it up about, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, and it was something she set up for to mark her 60th birthday, and it got bigger every year. And I was lucky enough to sort of start with them probably in year two, so I've been the kind of resident vintage singer for them since then, which is really lovely.
And that's why they appreciate class when they see it. In case you're wondering what's happened to Samantha Sutherland, it's all right, we're putting up as a bonus podcast afterwards. We talked about 84 Charing Cross Road, and that's another little issue that we felt we couldn't not respond to Kerry Laverne and actually provide a whole range of things there, including the Lady Sings CD, which is now available with 12. That's 12 fantastic lines from It's All Right With Me, It's a Good Day, All of Me, Don't Wait Too Long, a whole range of things. Fly Me to the Moon is there? Oh, a whole range of other factors there. And you can access that, Curry, I believe, by going to theladysings.co.uk.
Indeed you can.
Shameless plug. Let's open it up a bit more. Ruth, any questions you want to put to Curry, who, if you want to see somebody actually perform whatever the weather in the open air, doing marvellous things, Curry Laverne is the gal to go to. No, she got silent. Exactly. So no questions from Ruth there. Stephen?
Kerry, so how long have you actually been on the jazz circuit, sort of singing jazz?
About 6 years now, and I started it. I met somebody actually who was a Rat Pack singer in Tenerife, would you believe it? And we got talking about what he did, and he said, "Well, why don't you try and perform solo?" Because I'd been in musical theatre quite a long time, and I was getting a bit. I wanted to do something different. And so I just came back and had a go, really. I got started. Didn't go that well to start with. But then once I kind of understood how music production worked and then really found a genre in vintage, in the sense of anything really from the 1920s to the 1960s, which has been so in vogue over the last few years, it was a really good way to launch my solo career.
Fantastic.
It's just a win-win situation. Christian, do you think Kerry would go down a bomb in Wakefield?
Well, you're a bit too cultured for Wakefield, I'd say. But have you always sort of really sort of had a fascination with jazz, or is it kind of something that's evolved over the years, or is it?
I think probably the answer to that is, when we talk about jazz here, I mean, that's a very broad term. So this is really what I would call middle of the road trad jazz, so right. Jazz standards, and. I would say I've always really liked older music, probably. I've always been on that side of things. But, yeah, and when I started to explore people like Ella Fitzgerald, Dinah Washington, you know, Julie London, some of the great jazz singers, I really started to develop a love for it. So it really grew embryonically, to be honest. it probably wasn't there to start with, but it grew embryonically. And then the whole vintage scene is so big in the UK that it really was a good thing to get into.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have lived in Hull, so I do know Yorkshire quite well. I might be all right in Yorkshire.
And that's the kind of revelation from Carrie Laverne. She has once lived in Hull. It's astounding. It's truly wonderful. As we said, finding out where you are on tour and events and various other things, indeed contacting you to be booked for events, can all be accessed through the ladysings.co.uk. Choice of music, Carrie, would you like Night and Day? That's Cole Porter and Ella Fitzgerald. Or have you got any others? I mean, we've got Rod Stewart with What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? That's also with Ella. Either of those float your boat at all in terms of a musical?
Night and Day is a great song. I mean, a true jazz fan, let's have that one. Why not?
I think that's a wonderful way forward. And have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic return to the programme today?
Back on the programme.
Well, as I say,
speak to you.
I'm not sure we'll be able to get over to see your June event, but hopefully it won't be too long before we'll see you in concert once again. And certainly, are you up for joining us again by phone somewhere in the distant future?
Always a delight, Alex.
Like the beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall, like the tick tick tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall, like the drip 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 of the raindrops when the summer shower is through, so a voice within me keeps repeating you night and day. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are. I think of you night and day and night. Why is it so that this love silence of my lonely room, I think of you night and day, night and day. Under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and it's torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day, night and day. Under the hide of me, there's an old sense.
84 Charing Cross Road, a wonderful movie back in the day, is now a stage show and indeed is on tour for a fairly short tour, but one which actually kicks off in Darlington in a few days from now, actually, 23rd of May, right the way to the 26th of May, goes off to Wolverhampton, Malvern, Richmond, Oxford and Cambridge. And we're delighted now to be able to speak to one of the cast of the aforementioned 84 Charing Cross Road. She's the legend who plays Cecily Farr, but she's also, under her credits, got Beauty and the Beast, The Paper Dolls, a whole heap of other things. It's the wonderful Samantha Sutherland. How are you, Samantha?
Oh, that's very kind. Yes, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Brilliant, excellent, and just delighted to touch base with you yourself. Now, you've got a very fulsome cast, actually, which obviously is just part of the whole thing, because you have a lovely mixture of Stephanie Powers and Clive Owen from that point of view. It's looking pretty good, really, isn't it?
Very good, very good. Yes, I mean, obviously, Stephanie Powers is a force of nature from her times across Broadway and lots of American television shows, especially Heart to Heart, which I think is probably what she's most well known for.
Well,
I think her fans are called Hearties. I think we'll have a lot of Hearties coming along.
And rightly so. I mean, you're probably looking for Freeway and the Butler Max, but still, there we are. Interestingly enough, actually, one of our regular correspondents from San Diego, Arthur Weingarten, actually wrote a few episodes of Girl from U.N.C.L.E., actually, which was Stephanie's breakthrough show back day. So it's all connected. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Stephanie, much as it's a wonderful thing. We're here to talk about your good self, Samantha, and the actual play itself, 84 Charing Cross Road. As I said, based on the movie, you're probably far too young to ever remember the movie or sort of seen the movie, but it's a wonderful comedy and action.
Oh, it is, yeah. I know, I did watch, as soon as I got the audition through, I watched it, and it's absolutely charming. It's lovely.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. So it's a wonderful sort of, which of course has its roots in reality. It's a real life story. Share with us, what's it all about?
Yeah, well, it's about a writer called Helene Hunt, who back in 1949, she was based in Manhattan in New York. She started writing letters to a bookshop in London, funnily enough, at 84 Charing Cross Road. And she describes her taste in books as antiquarian. She loves her old books, so she writes to this old bookshop, and she's got lots on her list that she'd like, things like Samuel Pepys' diary and Hazlitt essays and old versions of Bibles and things. And, of course, they've got these wonderful books. And so they start to send these books to her across the water, and they sort of strike up a friendship, really. And that's why it's lovely. That's why it becomes a story, because we find out more about Helene Hunt and we find out all about the people that work in the bookshop. And it crosses a span of 20 years. So it starts in 1949, you know, during rationing is still going on. And it's just such a different world in England as it is in America at that time. And you get to experience both worlds, which is really lovely.
Now, from your own perspective, the character of Cecily Farr, how does he impact in the whole narrative story?
Oh, well, it's lovely when she appears, actually, because she gives it such a different kind of energy all of a sudden. Cecily is a lady that works in the bookshop, and she takes it upon herself to secretly write to Helene, because she's heard all about this very eccentric American lady that's writing requests for books, and she becomes very interested in this character. And so behind her boss's back, she actually writes a letter of her own to Helene, just to sort of introduce herself, really, and say thank you very much for all of the parcels that Helene sends. Because Helene very cleverly finds out about this Danish company where you could order lots of treats like meats and fruit and sugary things that, of course, you couldn't get during the time of rationing. So she would get it delivered from Denmark to the bookshop in London, so that the people that worked there could all share these treats, which is it's an amazing thing back in the early 1950s. So Cecily writes to say thank you herself and give a bit more detail about the people that work in the shop.
Indeed, as my students on the Origins of Modern Britain module for Level 2 Journalism would actually say, yes, they didn't realise that Britain still had rationing until pretty much the coronation in 1953. It was
yeah,
very much in place there.
Yeah.
So historically accurate for that. I think I've just realised, actually, it's Clive Francis who, of course, is the I think I might have mentioned Clive Owen, but never mind.
Oh, did you?
Easily confused, you know, one or the other, separated birth.
Both
could be
equally
different.
As
Well, there we are. Let's move on to your own background. I mean, you mentioned obviously Stephanie being known for Heart to Heart. I suspect that Chuck E. Cheese and the Galaxy 5000 is something which many people will say, "Yay, it's the dancer from Chuck E. Cheese and the Galaxy 5000." Was that an early sort of role in which you were sort of saying, "Yes, this is for me, the business of show"?
Wow. She must have kept that one to herself. I haven't heard about that one, but I'm going to be straight on it and ordering so I can watch myself.
it's wondrous. That's the important thing. And, of course, you're also known for the wonderful TV series The Green, Green Grass, of course, in which you were Sarah. That was back in 2009. Amazing. I can't believe it's that long ago, actually, but still, there we are. It works through that. If you're faced with the question of giving advice to actors young actors who are thinking maybe joining the profession, etc., what would you say the best route forward? Is it theatre? Is it a combination of both? Is it radio, perhaps? What sort of route would you suggest is the best way to pursue?
I think that, I mean, I went to drama school when I was 18, and I suppose when you're that young, you just all you know is that you have a passion for telling stories and playing characters. So you sort of get through drama school, and then it's
for me, I just kind of went along with what kind of sort of happened. I became a yes person, which I thought was a really important lesson. And, you know, you work with lots of different people and then suddenly opportunities start to arise. And I've just kind of rolled with it, really. One thing that I explored, which kind of came out of nowhere, was puppetry. And that's been a really important thing to me. And, you know, had I not been a yes person, as I've said, I probably wouldn't have ended up doing that. And actually, it's opened lots of exciting doors for me. And also being an actor musician, this show, 84 Charing Cross Road, is an actor musician show, which means that it's a play, as we know, but lots of the actors actually play musical instruments live on stage as well to kind of heighten the atmosphere and the story. And so that's something that's been really useful for me, because I play various instruments. So I would say to anyone that's kind of starting out, whatever skills you have, exploit them. Basically, if you play a little bit of clarinet,
Samantha Sutherland, whatever skills you have, exploit them. You hear the full interview as a podcast very shortly, later on today. 84 Charing Cross Road, currently on tour, and of course at the Darlington Civic Theatre as well. Alan Stevens, thank you for your patience and waiting for us. You might have been listening there, might have been actually sort of thinking, I wonder if I can use Samantha Sutherland as a voice artist in one of my upcoming radio productions. But how are you, sir?
Hiya, fine. Who was that?
That was Samantha Sutherland, who's currently on tour with Clive Francis and Stephanie Powers, of course, from Heart to Heart, long before any of the folk in the studio would have even known about Heart to Heart or The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. But quick introductions for yourself and the forgetful listener, or listener might have just joined us. We have, first of all, the return of Tessa Snart. How are you, Tessa?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful. We also have Stephen, a postgraduate student reading MA in Journalism, Atkinson.
Hello.
And we also have Ruth. I'm from Hackney Marshes. Don't forget it. Olawadare.
Hello.
And we also have Christian, get the pronunciation right, Arkabovitz. No, it's Arkabovitz.
Oh, how are you doing?
Well, so there we are. That's a set of it. Now, I suspect, I mean, Tessa, you're kind of familiar with the site. In fact, you've met Alan, have you not? You've met Fiona, certainly. I think you met Alan Stevens. Fiona, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know he is the Doctor Who scholar.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, exactly. It's wonderful. Well, his latest excitement post is Missing Scene from Earthshock Discovered. So I think it's fair to say, Alan, you need to explain for the benefit of the team here what exactly has created this excitement, which, in fact, I'm going to also like, together with Fiona Moore and several others, that whole piece, why this missing scene from Earthshock has been discovered.
Well, I often put stuff up on my site to to wind people up. And there was some chap who had a sort of cave set, and he'd taken these model Cybermen, which were done by Character Options, and lit it rather nicely and taken a photograph. And I thought, well, that looks like a scene from Earthshock. So I, as a Cybermen never actually appeared in those caves, but they were caves, you know, I took a picture, which I thought was very good, and just wrote on it, missing scene from Earthshock. So I'm not quite sure. I'm booting my computer up now to see if there's any, you know, sort of reaction of people actually saying, my goodness, there is, really is a missing scene from Earthshock.
We can actually give you a couple of them. We have Paul Lee saying, excellent, you have the Cyber Lieutenant, referring to the rear portions, gluteus maximus, etc. You've replied to that one. I see Adam Somers, I enjoyed episode 5 on the DVD. That's pretty much it, really. The William Shatner.
At this point, everybody used to be by now, you see.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that. What was that the lady you were interviewing? She mentioned a famous book called concerning antediluvian books, and it was the name of a house, wasn't it? What was it called?
84 Charing Cross Road.
Yeah, I keep getting that muddled up with 10 Rillington Place.
Oh,
when she was saying, when she said that, and said a comedy, I thought 10. And then it made sense. But
That's the art of drama, you see. You know, sometimes serial killer acid baths can be as comedic as Sweeney Todd, or not, as the case.
Did he use an acid bath? I can't remember.
Well, I think there was an acid bath in there somewhere, or maybe I'm incorrect. I don't know. I have to check.
There was a guy who used an acid bath, wasn't there? He believed that there was something about if you couldn't find the corpse, and you couldn't convict him, and he was saying it was wrong, of course, an alien. but I can't remember that word. The acid bath murders, obviously, we'll have to look it up on Google to find out.
The challenge, Alan, as we're well aware, is when you're checking out serial killers, not getting confused with Kellogg's. But there we are. Let us move on. Stephen, any questions you'd like to put to Alan Stevens? You may have no interest whatsoever. The whole Atkinson family will have zero interest in matter science fiction or Battlestar Galactica or indeed Doctor Who, but then again, he may.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have a massive interest, but most of my family are quite addicted to Doctor Who, really. Do you prefer the sort of modern era or the old stuff?
Interesting question, really. I mean, I would say, considering the old stuff, which I would say was from 1963 to 1989, I would say I love it. That doesn't mean I think it's all good, but I kind of have a love for it, whereas I don't really have a love for the new stuff, though I do admit that some of it is very good. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Profound, I would have thought. Tessa, as you know, we've been working gradually for all 3 years at the university on sort of converting it to. I mean, how's it taking? I mean, is it a case of we need to do more postgraduate study on this, really? Well, a science fiction version of Sound and Country Vision, that's what we're looking for.
Well, we could try that. Mm. We could always try that. Alan could come on as well and be a co-host.
You know, I think this could be
this
could be on site. I mean, there's a sad lack, I feel, Alan.
Could have a cowboy robot.
Yeah.
Sad lack of me.
No, a sad lack of country music science fiction. You know, there isn't a great deal that's actually out there, which is, so I think we need to look at that. Christian, does Doctor Who reach Wakefield, or is it a case of why would it?
Yeah, I grew up watching it. Well, the new ones with Eccleston in, and after that, I was quite into all Battlestar and all that, but...
So when you speak to him next week, you'll have lots of questions for Alan Stevens.
Yeah.
You put yourself on your head in the noose now, haven't you, mate?
Okay.
You should have seen that one coming out like a train in a tunnel.
So it goes. And Ruth?
I'm not really a science fiction fan, so...
No. The response that you gave to some of the science fiction, what's that? It's understandable. That's perfectly okay. Alan, astoundingly, that's pretty much brought us to the time where we have to think...
Hang on.
Yes.
Hang on before you go.
Go on.
Graham Harper. I'm still waiting to hear back from him.
Well, he was on a bus in London last night. We can confirm this.
Two emails so far.
I know you CC'd him into that.
Absolutely nothing at all.
Well,
my respect for him. And...
Oh, come now. As I said last night on the show, Tessa and Ruth and Stephen will confirm this. He was on a London bus just outside Marble Arch.
And he ended up at Hyde Park, I think.
So he might still be there.
London bus for 3 days. Okay, I'll accept
that. Take that on board. That would be fine. We thank Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Sophie Klepp, Jenny Wiggle, Dr. Jean Emberlin, Samantha Sutherland, Kerry LeBurn, and you, Alan Stevens, and certainly in the studio, Tessa Snart, Christian Arkabowicz. Oh, Arkabowicz, yeah, Christian.
He'll get that right eventually.
Yeah, Stephen Atkinson, Ruth Oluwadare.
Yes, Oluwadare.
Hello, Derek. Yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you.
See what you did there? Nice. I wouldn't use it, but there we are. And we will be back with the Midweek Drive next Wednesday and Thursday Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Keep on keeping on regardless. This evening at 7 o'clock, the Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, and Robin Pierce.
Robin Pierce has contributed to the... CT, which is coming out in about 2 weeks' time, so you can ask about that. Celestial Toy Room.
Exactly.
He's written a story about he's written about his childhood experiences with Doctor Who when he was terrified by a bagpipe playing Cyberman.
Brilliant. Whether indeed he's asked about that is entirely up to Sam Stone. It's her show. I just press a button or two. That's it, really. So
one instructor. They are your puppets, aren't they, after all?
Has he failed to get back to you as well? Is that the problem?
Everybody gets back to Alan because everybody loves the Forest of Dean. That's the important thing. Alan, I take it it's been an okay but short telephonic link with yourself.
Well, no, it was short, wasn't it?
Okay.
It's been an hour, it's been great.
Yeah, that's another time.
30 seconds, no.
Tessa, what's the final question?
Oh, will you be returning to the show soon? Mm.
Oh, that isn't the final question, though, is it? She worded that wrong, and you're going to get punished afterwards by that. Oh dear. They'll never be invited back. Yeah, it was great. Yes, I will.
Sometimes,
if Alex invites me.
Sometimes it just goes off into a completely different world and time shell. Never mind. Life continues. Actually, Tessa couldn't even hear you from that point of view. She's never headphones on, Alan. But that's okay. All's well with the world.
What's the point?
I know. I know.
Headphones on.
What is the point, really? What is that? Take that with you as you head off into the wild blue yonder of another midweek drive morning edition. Have a great bank holiday. If you're watching Liverpool versus Real Madrid, hopefully all goes well with respect to that. And just enjoy the weather. I gather it's raining on Friday. Saturday should be good.
Now.
If you're in Saltburn, check out Els Bailey at the Saltburn Blues Club. I think Tessa will be there as well, signing autographs.
Yes.
Fantastic. Doing an on-location report for Sound and Country Vision and more. That's pretty much it. We've got Charlie Puth featuring Kehlani taking us up to the news. Can we all say farewell? A 1, 2, 3.
Farewell. 1, 2, 3.
You know I've given this everything, baby, honestly. Tell me what you've done.